Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Seiko. Zach, how are we doing today?
I guess I'm glad I'm not the Penn State football team, because that loss to Ohio State had to be demoralizing. And it was, from what I gathered from James Franklin's presser and then the available players that spoke to the media afterwards.
Yeah, those are the kind that hurt, especially when you're in a season where, and this is typical of every season for Penn State over the last however many years.
A decade?
They're the games that you're supposed to win. And then these are the games that it feels like there's an outsized value to it. Even this year, where there should be less pressure on the team, a playoff appearance is still there and available to them. There wasn't the same pressure to win this game. But why did it still feel that way, Zach?
I think because generally, as I mean, I won't speak for every Penn State fan or reporter or spectator, right? Somebody that appreciates Penn State football. I think collectively we kind of made it that way, because in the preseason, I'm not sure what changed. The consensus was that, okay, Penn State can go at worst 10-2. 11-1 is pretty realistic with a loss to Ohio State, and then maybe 12-0 if the stars align. Well, the stars did not align, but 11-1 is still there. So, Jim, what changed? What's the frustration? What's the outrage? If the frustration, I understand the frustration of it's the definition of insanity. The same thing keeps happening over and over and over and over again. And the only reason 2016 is any different was because of a miracle play. A miracle play kept Penn State from an even longer losing streak beyond 2016. So I understand the frustration. You could see it for someone like Javon J. Thomas, who's played 6 years of Penn State football, and he's never been a part of a team that has beaten Ohio State. So that's the gold standard, and you continue to not measure up to it. So I understand the personal frustration there. But the goals are all still the same here. I never expected Penn State to beat Ohio State preseason, leading up to it, in the middle of game week. Ohio State is a national championship caliber team, and Penn State is right there. I think what's even more frustrating, Jim, is that they could have won this game. They should have won this game, and they didn't. They were inside the 5-yard line twice, and they came away with 0 points. The offense scored 6 points. The defense pitched in 7 points, and it still wasn't enough to beat Ohio State. Penn State could have won this game, should have won this game, and they did not. But nothing's changed in terms of my opinion of this team and the outlook for this season. They can go 11-1 and host a college football playoff game, and I thought that's what everyone was happy with.
Well, let me give you my theory, Zach, and I think you kind of touched on it a bit. The national media, the national narrative is Penn State can't beat Ohio State, and James Franklin can't beat. It's true. And that's a terrible thing. Well, there are a lot of teams that have very bad records against top five teams. That's what makes them top five teams. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, hey, you're not beating an undefeated team. Well, if you did beat them, they wouldn't be top five. They wouldn't be undefeated.
Exactly. Yeah.
But my feeling, and you hit on it a little bit, is the opportunity was there, not just could have, but perhaps even should have won. Mm-hmm. And this is not the first time. There were games in the fairly recent past where Penn State had a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter, Zach.
Oh, I know.
And found a way to lose those games, okay? And here, I know it was early, but it was a 10-point lead early, and they still found a way to lose. And what you also pointed out, twice inside the five and did not get 1 point out of it. Mm-hmm. And I think, Zach, I think that is part of the frustration, even more so than the 1-10 record.
The biggest turning point of the entire game was, I mean, it took Ohio State a miraculous play to win the game. the defensive back, Igbinison, who ends up making that interception and conveniently dragging the toes along the boundary when the ball ends up in his hands for no apparent reason. He didn't take it away from Trey Wallace. It went through Trey Wallace's hands and into his. He happens to get 1 foot down, and it's an interception, and they turn away Penn State from the red zone. That was the differentiating play in this game, Jim, because if Penn State's tied in that instance and it's 20-20, you don't have to go for it on 4th and 2. You can kick the field. It really came down to 1-2 plays selectively. So Penn State is closer. Penn State, Britt, and I know that doesn't matter. The only thing that matters in college football, Jim, is wins and losses. If Penn State had won 6-3, everybody would have stormed the field probably. It didn't. It doesn't matter what the score is at the end of the day. It's about wins and losses. No moral victories here. Oh, well, Penn State is closer. But let's be honest, Jim. If I'm being honest, Penn State is as close to Ohio State as it's ever been. However, Ohio State did get better. Ohio State, all things are fair in love and war. You have NIL and you have the transfer portal. Jim, Ohio State should not have this team. Will Howard and Caleb Downs and Quinshon Judkins, if it wasn't for NIL, like, those guys were pretty comfortable at Kansas State and Ole Miss and Alabama respectively. Like, they probably had pretty decent NIL packages at those respective schools. And then guys who would have naturally gone off to the NFL, who would have been day one or day two picks. JT Tuimoloau, the star defensive end that's disrupted every game that he's played against Penn State. Denzel Burke. Those guys, and a Travion Henderson and an Emeka Ibuka, those guys would have been no later than round 3. But because you can make $1 million to $2 million in NIL when you're that good in college football, you stay and you pass up on your dream on the NFL. You at least table it for one more year. So Ohio State maximized its branding and its NIL, which is all unfair because this is the day and age in college football. But Penn State did everything in its power to close the gap on Ohio State, and it still wasn't enough because Ohio State said, you know what, we're going to play to win, and they used the system to their advantage.
And I think the frustrating part, again, Zach, is that I believe if Penn State would have lost this game where it went different, where it was just, you know what, Ohio State is just playing the better team. They're more talented.
I mean, they are, but it was so close,
But, by any measure, they're the better team.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll throw into this a couple things. The lasting memory from this game, Zach, will be, you know, Tyler Warren taking this team down the field, getting them down to the 3-yard line where it's first down. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Penn State has this new creative offensive coordinator, okay? He's going to be that differentiator. You get inside the 5-yard line, Zach, first down, 4 shots at it. And what do? You run the ball right up the middle 3 times, and your best player, Tyler Warren, you've been bringing him in to play quarterback for just this kind of situation, but you don't do that. First of all, I'm trying to figure out, why is that? What happened there? What's the logic?
I mean, hindsight's 20/20. Tyler Warren is also coming off of a big gain there. Is there a chance that he's ready to take that snap? And so there's the argument that he's tired, that he's fatigued. Okay. I don't blame Andy Kotelnicki, because now the comparison's being made. Oh, well, at least Mike Yurcich scored more points against Ohio State. Penn State was out of that game. Andy Kotelnicki, did he call a perfect game? Did he call a great game? No. He bears responsibility. But did he call a good enough game to put Penn State in a position to win? Yes, he did. It came down to execution. The offensive line was not blocking. Wide receivers weren't getting open. Andy Kotelnicki can't run the football in himself. They are at the 3. You have Catron Allen. You have the fat man, right? You have Vanga Ioane coming in motion. What is the excuse that Ohio State can stop them at the line of scrimmage 4 times in a row? They covered that 4th down and goal play very well. I don't agree with throwing the football. I think, well, you're this close, why not try and run it again? Because you kept getting close. and closer and closer. So hindsight's 20/20, and I'm not a college offensive coordinator. I get the idea for the call. And Khalil Dinkins, there's an argument to be made that he was tackled in the end zone before the ball got there. There's an argument to be made that that was pass interference. That's neither here nor there. Penn State lost. Wins and losses are the only thing that matter. But Andy Kotelnicki had put Penn State's offense in a position to win this game more often than not. At some point, pointing the finger at James Franklin, pointing the finger at Andy Kotelnicki are easy, but the players did not execute. Trey Wallace did not catch a touchdown. And Catron Allen and the offensive line did not push forward into the end zone when they were just a couple yards away. What is the excuse there?
I think, and you're right, and just to flip it to the other side of the ball, when Ohio State got the ball back on their own one-yard line, still over 5 minutes to go, and the defense could have come up with – they come up with a stop there. You give the offense the ball again in great field position. So the defense, the line of scrimmage, those two series, Ohio State won both sides. Now, you brought up the point about, and it's a good one, Tyler Warren just had a long run, so maybe on first down. But what I had an issue with the play calls were there was seemingly no option. Drew Aller puts the ball in Catron Allen's gut. Does he keep it or not? Drew Aller was never a threat to keep the ball. Perhaps if he did, he could have scored. So why not, if not Tyler Warren, why not Bo Prabula? If you're just going to ram the ball up the middle, how about presenting a threat to do something else?
I agree, and that is my only criticism of the game plan, because again, I will stand by the fact that I think Andy Kotelnicki did enough to get Penn State a victory, because if that was a Mike Yurcich-led offense, Penn State doesn't have a fighter's chance. Andy Kotelnicki gave Penn State a fighter's chance in this one, and that's the difference. So 6 points, oh, well, Andy Kotelnicki took us backwards. That's far from it. I don't get me wrong. I think Bo Prabula should have been used more in this game. I don't know why he wasn't, especially since Drew Aller was not 100%. I had been advocating all week for Penn State to roll with a true two-quarterback system because it would have given you almost an element of surprise. I thought Penn State or Ohio State was kind of chasing its tail in a sense by trying to game plan for two quarterbacks. And it didn't work out that way. So I think Penn State missed an opportunity there. But Andy Kotelnicki put them in a position to win.
All right. Zach's going to be here for another segment. We're going to start to look forward when we come back after this break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Sako. We are talking Penn State football. We're wrapping up the Penn State-Ohio State game. Going to look forward a little bit. The whiteout game is coming. But speaking of the whiteout game, if you're coming into State College for a weekend, a great way to start that weekend is the whiteout party Friday night. That's November 8th from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Nittany Lion Inn. It is brought to you by Penn State's collective Happy Valley United. It's a great night. There's going to be some Penn State lettermen there, live music, food, open bar, dancing, tremendous evening, a great way to start the whiteout weekend. If you're interested in tickets, just go to happyvalleyunited.com and you'll get all the information. Promises to be a great evening. That's this Friday night, November 8th. All right, Zach, I said we'll get started looking forward. One last note on that, the play calling. I agree with you with Andy Kotelnicki. I don't think you just throw everything on him. It's his fault. He's done such a great job. But in playing the quarterbacks, they felt Drew Aller was healthy enough to play. But not only that, in the first half, there were several times he scrambled successfully. Yeah. But there was at least one play where he did pull it and run. And there was a lot of open territory there. I think that could have been the case in that situation along by the goal line.
And again, Drew is not, yes, he is a system quarterback to an extent because he's still 20 years old. He's still a junior, right? This is his second year starting, so he doesn't have all. But they trust him enough to make checks at the line of scrimmage, change the play, to make the appropriate reads. I fully believe that Drew has the option to keep the football there because 9 out of 10 plays in that situation are RPO plays. They are run pass options. So Drew can hand it off, he can keep it, or he can throw the football based on what he is seeing. It starts and ends with Drew Aller.
And I do, and watching replays, it did look like there was an opening there. One last thought for you, and I posted this on Twitter, mm-hmm. took just a screenshot. When they first line up in Vega Yoane, is split out to the left. Do you know nobody goes over there from the Ohio State defense?
Yeah.
He's literally standing there alone. I don't know if they have in their playbook anywhere that if no one covers him, just throw. Would you have had the guts to throw it to somebody wearing the number 71?
I mean, why not? Right. I can't imagine that Vanga Yuane has been playing enough football that he can probably catch a 2 or 3 yard lob pass. He's been asked about, I forget the offensive lineman that was asked directly about it after practice saying, and they made the comment, oh, you're probably not ever getting the football there as a joke. But I guess if Penn State felt strongly enough about it, I mean, maybe that's something, and they've considered it. I don't think they coach so much football. They look at so much film, so much tape. That's definitely something there. But I think against Ohio State, they didn't want to necessarily chance it. So I understand.
But could you imagine how different our conversation would be today, Zach, if Vega Yoane caught the game tying touchdown there? All right, let's move forward. Because believe it or not, there is still more to this season, and everything is still in front of this Penn State team. Mm-hmm. Zach, as you pointed out early on, a loss here, if you win out, and the first question is, James Franklin has taken a lot of heat for this game from a lot of places. It's a national story.
Nothing new,
Yeah, he's really getting crucified by the national media. We all saw him get into it with a fan walking off the field. James should have just kept walking. Mm-hmm. We all know that. I'm sure in his heart of hearts he knows that too. But the problem is, or the challenge for James Franklin now, Zach, I believe, is he can't lose to Ohio State a second time, which is what he has happened to his team a couple years. They have their first loss to Ohio State, and then they lose the following week to an inferior team. How does he keep that from happening to this team?
I mean, just win. It's there, right? It's not like this is anything new. I would argue that this team is positioned well to do that, but we've seen the 2017 team guilty of it, and that had Trace McSorley, that had Saquon Barkley, that had Mike Gesicki. That was a veteran-filled team that did not set the standard, and they became part of that reverse standard. That James Franklin teams go 10-2, they spiral, they lose a game, a follow-up game that they're not supposed to, and then the purgatory of Penn State football once again sets in. I would argue that how is this team different? I don't know for sure because they have all the elements that give me confidence. A veteran quarterback, a second-year starting quarterback, veteran running backs, a Julian Fleming that comes in, right? How do you handle a loss? Julian Fleming's been on the side of losing games at Ohio State. How do you actually handle this? You have two, I mean, Andy Kotelnicki and Tom Allen are head coaches in their own right. The head coach of the offense, the head coach of the defense. So I feel like there are checks and balances in place for them not to spiral. It also helps that they're having the whiteout game and they're at home the week after this Ohio State game. They don't have to travel on the road. There's no instance of a trap game. Now, I have some strong thoughts on Washington, but Penn State is at least in a position where, okay, we're let down by Ohio State. But it's also this, like, the season's not over. The entire Penn State season for 2024 is not predicated on this Ohio State game. And I will remind people of that until it, if Penn State loses a second game, then that's it. It's over. It's done with. But you finish 11-1, you will host a college football playoff game, and that was Penn State's goals. I think Penn State's goal is just, let's get in and find out what happens. Let's get into the playoff and see what we can do, because they believe they're a national championship team. They believe that they'll face Ohio State again this season. It's possible, and I still think Penn State needs to learn more about itself as a team. This is a new offense. This is a new defense. People from the transfer portal that are all trying to figure out how they fit in together and build chemistry. Better days of Penn State football are still ahead. It helps that you have a favorable schedule. Washington is not, you're better than Washington, you're better than Purdue, you're better than Minnesota, and you're better than Maryland. Win those four games, buck the trend of 10-2, go 11-1, and host a playoff game as the 6 or the 7 seed.
Zach, I wasn't going to mention this, but when you mentioned 2017 and you mentioned Saquon Barkley's name, I've got to bring it up. Did you see his performance on Sunday?
I did. I saw his highlights. I wasn't watching the game particularly, but Saquon is not human.
He is not. The only thing that could make him human was the New York Giants offensive line. That made him human. Yeah. Other than that, sorry for the digression. Let's get back to James Franklin and this team. What would it take, Zach, for you to call this a successful season for Penn State? Is 11-1 enough? Is it hosting a game? Is it winning a playoff game?
They need to win the playoff game, because if they finish 11-1, they get to the home playoff game, and then they lose that game, James Franklin's never going to live that down. James Franklin's never going to live that down. So they need to at least make the quarterfinal, where Penn State and James Franklin can turn the conversation in their favor, is because I don't think anybody's expecting them to get past the generally speaking. I don't think a lot of people, the majority of people, think that Penn State can get into the playoff. I think half are split on, well, they'll lose in round one, half are split on they'll win round one. And then a majority of people will say, well, they're not getting past the quarterfinal. There is no way. Hell will freeze over by the time they get to the actual semifinal. And I think, depending on who they play, they could get to the semifinal. And again, depending on who they play, right? It's just about getting, because Penn State matches up well with other teams. And we saw, again, there are no moral victories here, but they were close to beating Ohio State. Trey Wallace catches the touchdown. That changes the entire complexity of this game. And then Penn State, sure, they get turned away from the 5-yard line, but then they're up 23-20 because Ryan Barker makes a chip shot field goal. That is where the conversation changes, if Trey Wallace holds onto the football, or if that's even an incompletion. If that's an incompletion, the game's completely different. So one play changed the entire outcome of that game. I am not selling out on this team. They are not Ohio State, Georgia, Texas, or anyone, or Oregon at this point. But I think they can beat Miami. I think they can beat Notre Dame. We saw Clemson just lost to Louisville. Penn State is just right behind that tier of Elite Four teams. And in the game of football, anything can happen. They just got to get there.
Well, Zach, I am very much in agreement with you. I think make the playoffs with that home game, and you should win if you've got that home playoff game. And boy, if they could just get the number 5 or 6 seed, okay, as the home team.
Which they should.
They will then play either the number 3 or 4 seed in that second round. And I know I'm projecting out pretty far, but that's not Oregon or Georgia. It's going to be the winner of the ACC or the winner of the Big 12.
Miami?
I think they would match up real well. Again, I would like their chances against Miami in a neutral site, Zach.
Exactly, and I would too. I think Penn State's better than Miami, even though Miami has the better record.
Real quick, we got Wash. I don't want to overlook the rest of the season. We went further along, But I think that needs to be heard by Penn State fans, that that is still out there very realistically for this team. But it starts this week with Washington. Give us the quick scouting report on Washington, what we could expect from them.
I expect Washington to make it interesting. I think Penn State will have to find itself and rebuild its confidence in the first half. And Washington is peaking. This is actually a really talented football team, but it was built entirely through the transfer portal, new head coach. They're peaking at the right time. It's a low-scoring game. I think Penn State wins 24-17. That's what I'm going to go with as my score prediction. So I think Washington does keep it close, but the defense will be able. Washington's not good offensively, but they actually are really good, like top 10 defensively. And lower scoring game, I say 24-17 Penn State, but it will take some time. It is going to be another slow start here, but it's because of that Ohio State game.
It's going to be a lot of nervous Penn State fans if it goes the way you call it, Zach. But again, a comment you made earlier, margin of victory, it's W's and L's. You just win and advance. That's the point they're at. You know, James Franklin, he's famous for 1-0 for four more weeks. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's all what it boils down to. They win this game 6-3. Doesn't matter. It's a win.
Exactly. All right, Zach, really appreciate you coming on. As always, it goes way too fast. We'll keep our fingers crossed for this team that they could get the job done. They've got four more opportunities. We'll see how they do. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Shane Paul from the ForTheBloggy.com website. Shane, how are we doing this week?
We're doing good. Always good to be on the show. As we were just talking about, wish the outcome was a little bit different yesterday, but hey, that's why we have a 12-team playoff now.
That is the one redeeming quality to all this. The Nittany Lions still have a chance to get into the playoffs. They got to take care of business the rest of the way. They'll be favored in each game. So fingers crossed, the way we put it before here on this show is don't let Ohio State beat you twice. You lost this one, put it behind you, win out the rest of the way.
Right on. Yeah. Right. I mean, I think we can only hope that, barring any upsets, we get to see him again. And, we'll have our fingers crossed for that.
Exactly. All right. Let's get to why we have you on here. You put out an article last week on your ForTheBloggy.com, which I recommend to everyone. A great website, great information. And also check out the YouTube channel For The Bloggy. Some absolutely fantastic stuff. But Shane, you had a great article about Tyler Warren. And what I thought was interesting right off the bat, you said, let's not compare him to a Swiss Army knife, which everybody does. You said the better comparison is to a halberd. I hope I'm saying that correctly. First of all, what the heck is a halberd?
I'm gonna toss that one over to my editor. He usually throws in those quirky jokes, but to be honest with you, I have no idea either.
Okay. Well, that wasn't you. Based on the article, it's a medieval weapon. Very dangerous. Could hurt you in a lot of different ways. Look it up. H-A-L-B-E-R-D. I should have realized that wasn't you. But the point of the article was just how big a weapon that Tyler Warren can be. And even in a loss against Ohio State, where he was barely used, he still put up over 90 yards combined receiving and carrying the ball. So even against Ohio State and a game that Penn State didn't play very well, he was still the pretty big weapon.
100%. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, if it wasn't from the start of the season, from USC on, the middle linebacker and the entire defense's job whenever the offense breaks the huddle is going to be to point out 44. Where is he? Where is he a threat to us if he's lined up at the wing, at fullback, at quarterback, out wide? He's undoubtedly the centerpiece of what defenses are focusing on at this point.
Most definitely he is, or he certainly should be. And like I said, even in a game where Penn State doesn't play well and Tyler Warren didn't get many touches, he was still the biggest weapon on the Penn State side of the ball. And you pointed out him being a weapon, it's more than just the traditional tight end catching the ball. But let's start with the basics, the not so exciting stuff. But let's start with his blocking. He is actually a very good blocker and part of Penn State's strategy in their running game.
Yeah, I mean, the point I like to make initially is, you know, with tight ends, especially in the NFL, at least from my offensive philosophy, it's like if they're not going to be a threat in the running game, then why don't we just have another receiver out there? When tight ends are a true threat, it can act as a sixth offensive lineman. They are a threat when they have the ball in their hands, and they're a threat when the ball is in the air. We'll start talking about his blocking. They do a wide variety of things with him in the run game. So most commonly, I think everyone thinks of the counterplay. So it's a gap scheme run where a guard is going to kick out the defensive end, and he's just going to act as the lead blocker for the running back. And it usually results in a head-on-head collision with the Mike linebacker. So he has to be willing to take another bowling ball of a man head-on. But at the same time, there are runs like split flow inside zone where the entire offensive line is going to move in one direction on a zone scheme, and his job is to cut off the backside. So we just talked about middle linebacker, but what about a 280-pound defensive end that he has to completely seal on the backside?
And this is also a guy who could be physical because he's 6'5", 260 or so, and a willingness to put his head in there and put his nose in there and be a big-time blocker. And can you explain, it's often talked about like the pin and pull type blocking where the tight end, he's the pinner, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should have touched on that one initially, but this has been a scheme that they've ran for really the last three-ish years. I think it was popular under Yursich, and Kotelnicki didn't see a reason to get rid of it. So essentially, it's a sweep run. So they're targeting the D-gap usually, which is outside of the tight end. But the goal is to pin the edge, and you have to have a receiver or a tight end who's able to do that. And the entire play is predicated on that player being able to do that. Because if you can't capture the edge, you're going to get tackled in the backfield. So on this specific scheme, they usually use Warren as the pinner, where he'll line up in condensed look, where he's maybe a foot or two off the tackle, usually in a receiver stance, because that gives him better leverage to attack the defender's outside shoulder. But yeah, his job is to wash him down as far as possible. But you know, and I'm sure they tell him this when they install the play, that that defender cannot make the play. And you know, it's easier said than done, but he does a great job of it.
This is essentially the offensive version of the defensive end holding the edge on the other side of the ball. And you need a guy who's physical enough and a tight end as opposed to a wide receiver counting on him to do that kind of thing. So let's get to the more exciting things. And it's pretty obvious that in the Wildcat situation where Tyler Warren is actually receiving the snap, and we're talking a little bit about the game this past weekend against Ohio State, what was interesting to me, Shane, and I don't know if you could tell this in watching the game on TV, but I know being there, the first time Tyler Warren goes into the backfield to take the snap, there's a reaction from the crowd. They are that aware of it now. And there's some basic plays that they start with him as the Wildcat quarterback. Could you go over those for us?
Yeah. So really, they've ran two schemes only. I'll start with power read. So this is a play where there's a power scheme going on up front. So you're going to get down blocks from the front side of the offensive line. They're going to be trying to wash their defensive lineman in front of them down towards the football. And you're going to get the backside guard pulling around as the lead blocker. Where the read part comes in, as there will be what I call a bash look. So the back will run straight across the quarterback's face. You know, he running straight towards the sideline, completely horizontal and almost a sweep pattern. And then the quarterback's job, or Tyler Warren in this case, is to read the defensive end. So if the defensive end squeezes down or in a surf technique, so he sticks his arms out wide and tries to play both the running back and the quarterback, then, you know, we just hand the ball to the sweep. He captures the edge, easy 4 or 5 yards. Where it can really be a gash is where the defensive end tries to take away the sweep. So he flies upfield, and then the quarterback takes the ball on the power scheme up the middle. So they ran this on the goal line a couple times, I believe, against Illinois. One Warren touchdown, one Singleton touchdown, I think. Then the other scheme is just sort of a counter look and from an unbalanced formation. So they'll pretty much put all the eligibles to one side of the field. Warren at quarterback, a running back sidecar. And they'll put that running back on sort of like a swing or rail route to hold that D-gap defender. Well, the trick is that D-gap defender is also responsible for the run. So it puts him in conflict. And if he decides to take away the pass, which he should, or, you know, as we saw against, I can't remember which team it was, Warren will just flip it out to him, and it's an easy 20 yards. But if he decides to take it away, then again, Warren runs behind a power or a pulling lineman. And we saw it yesterday. Once he gets to the second level, he's pretty hard to tackle.
Yes, he definitely is. Now, what was interesting in the Ohio State game, you mentioned some of these plays being run on the goal line. Penn State fans are wondering, Shane, how come we didn't see that against Ohio State when they were inside the 5 yard line?
If I had coach's number, I'd probably call him up and ask, but I think it comes down to they overthought it a little bit. I mean, there's no doubt if Warren were to get in the backfield, Ohio State would have sent the house. You know, I guess it's easy to play Sunday morning quarterback where you say, you know, we should have gave him the ball 3 times. But just to play devil's advocate, I mean, it's worth noting that the entire stadium probably thought he was going to get the ball. So maybe we were trying to do some reverse psychology of sorts. But to be clear, when I'm eventually calling plays at Penn State, God willing, our playmaker will get the ball in that situation.
I think that wasn't in hindsight or Monday morning quarterbacking. I think the fans thought at that time, my thinking, and you mentioned in both these basic setups, there's an out for him. One of them is handing it to the running back. The other is a toss. There's, you call it the relief player, the running back coming out of the backfield, so that when the defender's in conflict, hey, if they are crashing on the playmaker, Tyler Warren, he has an alternative, an option, which really they weren't letting Drew Aller have the option of keeping the ball on Saturday. He was giving the ball to Catron Allen. There wasn't more than one thing for the defense to worry about, quite simply.
That's a good point, yeah. It comes down to, you know, do you trust your quarterback with the football? Do you want to put the ball in his hands with the game on the line? Or do you want to flip the coin and put your best playmaker back there? Again, I would have given him the ball, but I guess I can see from the coach's point of view, you know, why they maybe felt more comfortable keeping a quarterback back there.
You're being very reasonable, Shane. That's unacceptable. We don't want reason or common sense. We're upset. That's what we want to talk about. One last thing, real quick, in less than a minute. The power shovel is the other part. Explain that real quick, because that's a fun play and has been effective for them.
Yeah, it's by far my favorite play in football. So it's the exact same scheme as power read, which we just discussed. But instead of the quarterback taking being the power runner, it just comes in the form of a shovel pass. So if the defensive end flies upfield and, you know, tries to take away the sweep, we just shovel it underneath. And it's no different than had the quarterback kept it. And it's especially good when you don't have a mobile quarterback or you don't want your quarterback to take a hit because all he's doing is flipping it a couple feet in front of him.
And if the ball's dropped, it's just an incomplete pass. It's not a fumble. Fun play to watch. Tyler Warren is such a fun player to see. Glad he's on Penn State.
We've got one more segment with Shane. Stick with us. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Shane Paul from ForTheBloggy.com. Shane, you know, in this game, Penn State, Ohio State, a tough loss for Penn State, made all the tougher by the opportunities that Penn State had. And in talking to folks since the game, all the conversation, besides the, they got to fire James Franklin, most of the conversation is about that last possession that Penn State had, where they had a first down at the 3-yard line. They're inside the 5 for the second time in this game, and they eventually don't come out with points. And this is all that people are talking about, Shane.
It is. I mean, rightfully so, right? You got four plays to get 3 yards to put yourself in a really good place to win the game. And they weren't able to get it done. So, yeah, this is going to be a talking point for a long time, I think.
It is. So let's, instead of just going over the generalities of it, let's look at this play by play, all four of the downs, right from the start. Let's start with first down. And the formation, they started out with 6 offensive linemen, a couple tight ends, just one wide receiver, Julian Fleming, and they were overloaded to the left side when the play set up. We all know then the play goes, Catron Allen running the ball up the middle. Tell us what the goal was of that play. What were they trying to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, I'll back all the way up. So common short yardage theme this season has been some form of like a sugar huddle. So they'll huddle up and they'll sprint down to the ball, usually in an unbalanced formation. So in this case, they had the guard and the tackle on the right side, but then everybody else, regardless of position, was lined up on the left. I think they had 2 sniffers. And really the goal is just to move quickly.
Well, first of all, 2 sniffers, what does that mean?
So essentially they're just lined up behind the offensive linemen, technically like an H-back, but, when they're not specifically, angled halfway off the tackle, then I guess they're considered a sniffer.
Okay.
But really the goal of this and the reason you go fast out of the huddle is you're trying to catch them off guard, and you're trying to gain an extra gap on a certain side of the line of scrimmage, in this case, the left. But to be honest with you, like the overarching theme with this whole series or these 4 plays is, you had 4 plays to get 3 yards, regardless of scheme, regardless of, the specific blocking schemes that they use, specific backfield ball handling, you got to be able to get three yards in 4 plays. And, you can dress it up however you want, but it comes down to being able to get push in the trenches. And if you're not able to do that, then you're going to have a tough time beating Ohio State.
Well, you got to get 3 yards, but apparently not because they didn't. So on first down, they didn't get much of a push. Ohio State's defense held them. They were better up front than Penn State's offensive line. Now, second down and third, it was more of a balance on the line of scrimmage, and they had, we become used to this, Vega Ioane, the big offensive lineman, was split out, and they put him in motion on both of these plays.
Yeah. So on first down, they just ran a simple duo scheme. So they're trying to create as many double teams at the point of attack as possible. And you're trying to do what's called dent the defense, which is what I said. You're trying to get as much vertical push up front as you can. And it's a play designed to get a couple yards if you need them. But it all comes back to being able to get push up front. So after first down, they decided to present it a little differently. And they put, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name, Vega.
Ioane
to kick out the end man on the line of scrimmage. So went from running just a simple duo scheme to now running duo kick. Right. So it's the same thing up front. Offensive linemen are all responsible for the gap closest to the ball. In essence, there are exceptions. You're trying to create double teams, but instead of just having the tight end or the widest player on the line of scrimmage responsible for the end man on the defensive side, you put the offensive tackle in motion, and you hope to gain a gap with his momentum. You know, you got a 300-pound guy running full speed. You would hope that he's able to clear out some space so that if the run bounces, because the running back is reading A gap out, so A to B to C to D, that if he hits that D gap, he's going to have room to score. Obviously wasn't the case here.
Now, you were talking about the offensive lineman angling to the gap towards the center. So everything is focused towards the middle of the offensive line and trying to get pushed there, where Katron Allen was going on these for all three downs.
Correct. And to be honest with you, I mean, when you're this close to the goal line, you can call it duo, you can call it inside zone. All you're trying to do is not let anybody cross your face and get inside of you, and you're trying to create push up front. So the rules kind of go out the window in a way, because all the offensive linemen care about is making sure nobody gets inside of them and nobody pushes them backward.
So now on second and third down, it was Ioane in motion, and he was picking up the edge defender on Penn State offensive side's left side, okay? And it seems to me if you're just pushing up the middle, but he's going to the outside of the formation, he's kicking out the furthest guy, instead of – it only seems like that would be effective if the running back has an option to bounce it outside.
Yes, and he does traditionally – again, in duo, when they install it over the summer, you know, they have all these specificities where, you know, if, say, the Mike backer presses the A gap, then he moves out to the B gap. However, they coach it specifically. But again, and I'll say it for, you know, what is it, the fifth time now? The scheme kind of goes out of the window when you're that close to pay dirt, right? I think Katron Allen, when he was back there, he wasn't thinking about bouncing it outside. He was thinking about how do I get to the goal line? And, you know, unfortunately, they weren't able to create any push up front.
Now, one of the questions that comes up that I've gotten from a lot of people, and quite candidly, I'm one who brings it up too, is you're running a play where the quarterback hands it off to the running back, but it appears that he has the option to pull it out and run wide. That's the zone read. That's him reading the defense and determining whether to pull it out. I'll ask you later about Tyler Warren or Bo Prabula being in there. But with Drew Allard, he showed earlier in the game where they ran a play similar where he did pull it out. Nobody followed him. He got a nice pickup. I watched for that on all watching the replay. First, second, third down. And quite candidly, to my eyes, it looked like each down progressively, it became more wide open for him to pull the ball and run with it. But he never did.
Sure. And you said something there. So you said inside zone, or you said zone read. Inside zone and duo, and I still get messed up with this often. They appear to be the same run. They're both interior runs. But with duo, there's no read ever attached to it. Now you can RPO it downfield, but you know, if you're just talking in terms of reading like an outside backer or a defensive end, it's difficult to explain, but in essence the scheme of the play doesn't allow for there to be a read defender, right? Because everybody's accounted for. Like we said with how Ioane was kicking out the edge defender, you know, typically he would be blocked. But in a specific scheme, you're trying to have everybody accounted for so that you can run the ball in between the tackles, and if they take it away, bounce it outside. Now, was Drew Aller carrying out his fakes? Yes. And, you know, we're not in the quarterback room, so we don't know, you know, the specific reason, but it just comes down to why not, right? If he's just going to hand the ball off, he might as well carry out a fake if it, you know, helps a linebacker hesitate just a tad. It just comes down to why not, right? Like, why wouldn't you just carry out a fake around the edge and see what happens?
And I understand if they don't want him to be carrying the ball, and you start this series saying, we've got four shots to get 3 yards. We should be able to do this. But after first down, after second down, after third down, you're going through this progression where it's not happening. And, you know, you'd think at some point someone says, hey, wait a minute, brute force isn't working. Maybe in watching the first down, second down, if instead of him just carrying out the fake, how about actually carrying the ball? We'll get to that more. But I do want to get now to fourth down. Let's talk about this play where essentially, in fact, they talked about this, about Tyler Warren being the initial target, and Trey Wallace runs a quote-unquote pick play for him. But Ohio State seemed to work around that. There was a quick instant where it seemed like Warren may have been open and available. This was prior to reaching the goal line. They did get through. Drew Aller then makes the decision. The only other option he has is Khalil Dinkins, because he's the only other guy who's running a route, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So, I mean, to put your brain to get in the mind of a Ohio State defender here, so you stop them three times in a row. You know, fourth and goal, slim chances they're running the ball again. What is the most common goal line answer through the air? It's a pick play. Who is it most likely going to? Probably Tyler Warren, right? Especially when you have him, when you have the split of the receiver lined up, you know, kind of suspect, where, you know, he's obviously trying to get close enough to where he can get in the defender's way who's guarding Warren. It was all just pretty predictable. And, you know, I'm sure you're going to ask me, could it have been offensive pass interference had Harrison Wallace gotten in the way? Maybe they call it, you know, it's a coin flip anymore with some of these officials. But yes, I would say to our staff is, I think with fourth and goal, you want to provide yourself with more options. You know, it was really one to two. And if neither one of them were open, we were screwed. So
there wasn't much left to do. And of course, I think the overriding question to all of this is, you talked about they didn't really have the option for Drew Aller to pull it. Then why not use a Tyler Warren or even a Bo Prabula there at quarterback, where at least you give the illusion to the Ohio State defense, hey, that's a quarterback who might carry the ball. So I at least have more than one thing to look at. All right, Shane, I really appreciate your help on those plays. It still doesn't answer some of the questions that we have, and I'm waiting for James Franklin to give us a final answer on all of it. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.